Mountain Gap Church welcomes you to join us as we share this kingdom message of hope.
He looks beyond her activities, beyond her circumstances, beyond her surroundings, in straight into her heart. And he says, that woman has hope and faith. And I'm crediting that faith as righteousness, and I'm about to respond. Doing all right today? It's good to see you. See a bunch of smiles. That's a good thing. That always makes pastor feel better, you know. Let's pray. Father, thank you for what you showed me in secret. Help me today. Lord, touch my mind and touch my mouth. Touch my heart. And bring me to your Holy Spirit conclusions. And let it be valuable to us today. That you would speak, Lord, to this place. And that you would inspire us in our hearts. That you would give us strength. And Lord, we bless you, for you are a good God. And you are good to us. And we thank you for that this day in Jesus' name. Amen. It's good to be back in Mountain Gap. My wife is in San Antonio, and two of mine are in Buford, and Evan and I made a road trip, and we left yesterday. Those two boys unchaperoned in Franklin Springs might sneak out, so that's what we did. We went to all the boys' stores, PGA store, the Bass Pro Shop, you know, anywhere you could go to find boy stuff. And then we had boy food at Chili's last night, so we had a great time. Didn't we, buddy? That's right, my partner. It's been a good week. Have you ever heard the saying, I'm going around my hand to get to my thumb? Have you ever heard that statement? It just means I'm going the long way around to get somewhere. I'm about to go around my hand to get to my thumb. Okay, I have a message today that is going to require it's going to require some background. And then it's going to require me to tell you a story. And it's kind of a rated R story that I'm going to try to tell in a rated G form. Okay, it's a Bible story. You can rest. It's not a personal story. There are some stories in the Bible that make me a little uncomfortable. Okay, especially in the Old Testament. Okay, but there is great value in this story if you can use your imagination with me just a little bit to feel what must have been going on. I need you to feel it, because if you can feel it, then you can experience it. And if you can experience it, you can see the goodness of God in the midst of it. It's not a one-dimensional story. It's a three-dimensional story. And there are a lot of moving parts. And there are a lot of things we read right by, and we go, oh, okay. But we have to stop for a moment and analyze those few things so we can see the gravity of why they fit together like they do. And in the midst of that, we find a God truth there that is extremely helpful to us. So I'm going to take you around my hand to get to my thumb, but I promise you, I will take you to a place with the Lord's help that will be extremely valuable and encouraging to your heart. It was to mine. I've never studied this before. About 2 weeks ago, actually the week you guys were at Accelerant, I spoke at Matt's church up in Franklin County, and I love those people. They're friends of mine, and we had a good message, and right after that message was over, the Lord began to speak to me about this service. And so I'm excited to talk to you about this, but I'm also I'm trying real hard to dissect this stuff in my own mind analytically so I can not jump around and I can take you to a place in an organized fashion. Does that make sense? So pray for me as I do this because it's a little bit tricky, okay? The message today is in Joshua 2. And it'll be on the screen, so you don't have to turn. You can just look at it there if you want to. I'm going to read about 24 verses because I need you to hear them all, okay? This is not one of those where I can read you three verses and we can talk about it. All right, I need you to hear it all, okay? Then Joshua, the son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. Go look over the land, he said, especially Jericho. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. Now, all the Pentecostals already got a problem, right? We all got a problem with that right there, right? Because the spies are supposed to be clean boys and they don't go to the prostitute's house, right? So we already got a problem right here. I'm going to keep this rated G, but we're going to go somewhere. The king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent a message to Rahab, bring out the men who came to you and entered your house because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman who had taken the two men and hidden them, she said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. And at dusk, when it was time to close the city gates, they left. And I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that led to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuer had gone out, the gate was shut. Before the spies laid down for the night, she went up to the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given you this land, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og and the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is the God of heaven above and of the earth below. This is the prostitute talking. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother and my brothers and sisters and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death, our lives for your lives, the men assured her. If you don't tell what we are doing, and we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us this land. So she let them down by a rope through a window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. And she said to them, go to the hills so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there for 3 days until they return, and then go on your way. Now the men had said to her, this oath you made us swear to will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land you have tied the scarlet rope in the window that through which you have let us down, and unless you have brought your father and mother and brothers and all their families into your house. If any of them go out into the house, into the street, their blood is on their own heads, and we are not be responsible. As for those who are in your house, their blood is on our heads, if a hand is laid on them. But if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from this oath that you have made us swear. And agreed, she said, let it be as you say. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet rope in the window. And when they left, they went into the hills and stayed for 3 days until the pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them. And then the two men started back. They went down out of the hills, forged the river, and came to Joshua and told him everything that had happened. They said to Joshua, "The Lord has surely given us the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us." That's a lot of moving parts in that story. It's a deep story, don't you think? I mean, it's kind of sobering. It's kind of a sobering story because somebody's about to fight, right? I mean, there's tension in this story. But there's at least three moving parts in the story that we need to understand to find the goodness in this story. I was almost going to title this sermon, "Hope on a Rope." Because I think there's hope in that rope. There was future in that rope. So let's go there, okay? The first thing you need to understand, there's three things. The first thing is the physical condition of the surrounding. This surrounding, and let's just look at that next slide. I need you to see this. There's a slide right here. This is the river basin of the Jordan River. The Jordan River is 156 miles long, and it runs from the Sea of Galilee down to the Dead Sea, which is the lowest place on earth below sea level. So it runs from 700 feet below sea level down to 1,400 feet below sea level. It's a very steep, rocky descent. Okay, and in that is it's a dry area most of the time, and this river gets really small in the drought area, and then it gets pretty wide when the flood season happens, because the topography in that swell, in that gray area, is kind of at a like a bowl. So everything that's to the right, all right, we're looking at it. Everything that's to the right is desert, and everything that's to the left is headed toward it's headed toward a mountainous region. So it's in this like swell, and so you can imagine that it's kind of fished out like a bowl. But it's also steep. So when water floods, it runs into that canyon, and it's like the Grand Canyon, where water's just gushing. And there's hedge bush and shrub trees are on either side. And so when it gets turned up, the shrubbery comes loose too. It's a dangerous place at flood stage. All right. And it's only about 2 miles from the center point of the river left to Jericho, which you can see right there, okay? So it's a short distance from there, from the center of the river there. Now, what's happened at this point to make all this work is the Israelites are coming out of the desert, out of 40 years of the desert, and they're coming in from the right-hand side, and they're right down at the edge of the river. And there's 2 million of them. There's 2 million people. And they've been eating manna that God's made for 40 years. And they're sitting on the right-hand side of the riverbank. And Moses has just climbed the mountain. And well, he's told Joshua, "You're in charge now. I'm through. I've seen the promised land. The Lord's not going to let me enter it, but he's let me see it. And I can look across that river, across that ravine, and I can see that promised land, and now it's time for you to take over. It's your turn." And Moses tells him that, and he's trained Joshua all these years, and Joshua's never led before. He's always been the apprentice. And Moses turns and walks up the hill back toward the desert, and he is no more. The Lord takes him. And Joshua is sitting on the riverbank on the right-hand side of that Jordan River with 2 million people who are looking at him and deciding, can this man lead us or not? And so he sends these two spies across that flooding river to climb up into the landscape on, I guess this is my left-hand side. We're looking at it on the left-hand side. And they're looking at the landscape to see how they will conquer it. They also know that they can't cross that river because 2 million people can't cross that river because it's flooding. And so this chapter 2 is the two spies have crossed the river. They've gone across the landscape. They've been into Jericho. They stayed in a prostitute's home. And I don't know if they were looking for love in all the wrong places or if they were just there. I'm not sure how or why or whatever. There is no way to know why they were in the prostitute's house. Okay, the Bible doesn't talk about that, and I'm not going to speculate. What I do know is she was a prostitute, and she did have a brothel or whatever you want to call it, and they were there. Okay, that's all I know. It's not pleasant. I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable, but that was the scene. Okay. Now they've come back across the river, and they've told Joshua, this is what we found. And this is where the story picks up. Joshua then begins to say, we will honor this when the Lord gives us this land. Now, I'm going to come back to that in just a little bit. All right. But I want to turn the attention now to the town or the city of Jericho. Now, there's another image of Jericho. I want you to see this. Jericho actually had two walls. It had the outer wall, which we all hear about, which was 41 feet high. The first 16 feet were stone, and the remaining part of it was straight up, and it was built out of a mud mortar kind of a mix, and it was 6 feet wide in some parts and 8 feet wide in others, and so it was a wall that kind of angled up first and then went straight up. And so this wall to a person trying to conquer this city would have been impenetrable. You would not have been able to scale a 41-foot wall. Any military would not have been able to. Now, when you got over that first wall, there was a territory of dirt or earth, and on that earth there were houses that were built inside that wall, and that's where Rahab's house was. It was inside the wall on the wall. So she could see out of the wall, she could see through the wall, and she could see over the wall because her roof was on top. So she was at a place where her house was on that outer perimeter. Now, the inner perimeter was another wall that was about 16 feet tall. And let's just say it this way. The elite people, the people of means, they lived inside the second wall because it was all about defense. So if there was ever going to be a military attack, you wanted to be on the inside of the second wall because it gave you more time to defend against an enemy. So where Rahab lived was kind of the slums. It was kind of the low class end of the city, if you would say it that way, because she was on the outside wall. All right. Thus, probably why she was in the occupation she was in. Now, all of this is important because the king was on the inside of the second wall. Okay, there was a spring inside the city that created the water supply for the entire city. And that inside wall, that smaller section, was about 6 acres. And the outside wall was a circumference of about 12 acres. And there were about 1,200 citizens who lived in Jericho, according to the archaeologists and findings that you can read about. But there were suggestions that there was another 1,000 people inside the city in addition to the residents at this point, because there were so many other battles that had taken place and people had lost their homes in other cities and they had come to Jericho to find rest and to find protection. And so we find this situation where there's 2 million people on one side of the Jordan and there's a river that's cresting, and then there's 2,500 people inside of a city kind of locked down because they're scared about what's about to happen. Because there's no way that 2,400 people can fight 2 million people. And they know that there's been a past, there's been a reputation of the 2 million people that God has showed up and parted rivers. And God has showed up and helped them annihilate kings. And God has showed up and provided a cloud of fire by night and a cloud of shade by day in the desert, and that God has provided manna and food for 40 years. And there's a reputation, and the people of Jericho have heard about those people, and they're scared. The word says their fear has made them melt, their hearts melt. Do you sense the tension? Do you see the tension? Something's about to go down, and there's a winner, and there's a loser, and the losers are very uncomfortable. They're very fortified. It's harvest time because flax is there. They're in a place where they have plenty of food, plenty of water. They can lock the city gates. They can hunker down. There's no way that all these people can get in here, but we're still scared. Rahab is in that group. And the spies have gone out, and now they come back and reported, those people are scared of us. God's about to give that to us. Now, I don't understand, and I don't think any of us do, why God chooses to let one side win and one side lose. I just don't think I'll ever answer that question in my mind until I get to heaven and ask it. But they were a pagan group of people. They worshiped foreign gods. They were vile in their way. And they were carnal in their way. But I don't think God ever punishes people for being that way. His heart's desire is to redeem it. But for some reason, he needed to show these people who had come out of the desert his might and his power. And he needed to show them what to do. And so we find ourselves in this place where everything is coming down to a head and something is about to shift. I want to talk now for a minute. And I guess this is the most important part. There's actually a picture. You can go to that next picture too. Go to the next one. This guy was an archaeologist, and he did a study of the walls of Jericho in 1997. And this was a piece of the wall, what you're seeing right here, where he's standing. And there's at least an assumption, because it's the only piece of the wall that's still standing. The rest of it completely imploded. And what they said was that the top part of the wall fell off when God did it. They think that the top part fell off and created a rampart for the people to go up over the rubble over the second part. That's pretty clever. And they think that that's how, and if you read the word, it says that they went up into the city. And they think that that's how that happened, that the top part fell off by the shaking that God did, and that they went up over the top of the rubble straight into the city. So it made a place that was impenetrable become easy to conquer, which is exactly what happened. But there's one piece of the wall that's still standing, and it's this piece right here. And there's at least an assumption, because of where it's located, that perhaps this was where Rahab's house would have been. It's neat. It's neat. If you study this stuff, you see all kinds of stuff. All right, go to the next. You can go on. All right, so here's where I need the Lord's help. This is the flax that would have been on top of the roof. This would be, you know, if it's harvest time, you know, they cut a lot of this stuff and let it dry out, and then they use it, right? So this would have been on top of her roof. This is what they would have been hidden underneath. All right, you can go to the next one. But this is where the story really is. The story is really about a prostitute who was born in a pagan city, who evidently was pretty successful because she had a place. And God saved her. So what made her tick? Why was she special? What is it about her, out of all those people that he could have saved? He could have saved the prominent one. He could have saved the most educated one, the most talented one, the one who came from the richest family. Why did God choose a prostitute from the low end of the city to use as the woman who made it all possible? Does that ever cross your mind? I tried to put myself in her head. She's a little girl when it all starts. And the word says she was beautiful. So physically, she was a beautiful woman. She grew up into teenage years as a beautiful young lady. But she lived in a culture that didn't know God. And so they were a little bit, they didn't have any values. And while there were people who were getting married and creating homes and having a life, I just wonder if this young girl found in her heart that maybe she didn't have the self-esteem that she needed. Maybe inside she just didn't feel good about herself. Maybe people brought attention to her beauty and it bothered her that she was getting attention and she didn't know what to do. But at some point, she made a decision because of the attention she was getting to allow a man to take advantage of her physically. And then there's a broken feeling. And now her heart hurts. But then there was an attention with it too. And she was in a dilemma. And so it happened again. And then it happened again. And now she's making decisions to hang out with people that are making other opportunities not available to her anymore. Because she's made these decisions, now these decisions are not opportunities are not available. This is starting to feel a little yucky. And now she finds herself, now she's a disappointment to her mother. And now she's a disappointment to her father. And now she's in a place where she's having to make her own way because there's been a disconnect. But she must be a spirited woman because she's street smart. She must have a little bit of fire inside because she's determined that she will not fail. And now she's grown into her 20s. And now she's at a place where she's done this so much that she doesn't have a feeling anymore. Now women, and I don't want to go too far here, but when you allow yourself to be intimate with a husband, there is an element of trust that you have to get to let that happen. You have to trust that man. You have to care for that man. It becomes an intimate piece of who you are when that happens. And you feel it deeper than we do. But even we feel that. But for this woman, Rahab, she had been wounded in this area so many times that now she just opened her door to anybody. And as long as they'd bring cash, she would let them come in and let them inside and let them be intimate with her and let them write her a check or give him a credit card, give him cash and leave, never to see them again. Feels yucky, doesn't it? Do you feel that? Can you feel that? Strangers coming in. Strangers, travelers, partiers, rowdy men, rough guys. And this beautiful woman in her 30s now and 40s, reflecting on the past years of her life, looking back, realizing that she's never had what she's always wanted. And that is true love. And inside is this huge hollow feeling of, I have a home and I have friendships, but I have nothing. And when I lay down at night, I have all the memories of all of the people who have taken advantage of me. And now there's two spies in my house. And I've heard about them because the men who have come into my doors have talked about, did you hear what happened over there? Did you hear what happened over there? Can you believe what happened over there? And in her mind, she has, when those men have left her place of residence, she remembers the stories that have been told. And she's sitting there in the evening times, in the evenings of her life, and she's reflecting on this group of people that there really is a God who is alive, who is defending and providing for and taking care of His people. And she's heard about Him, but she doesn't know Him, and she has no way to get to Him. And in her heart, she's trembling in fear that these people are about to come and destroy my city. Now, here's what makes her street smart. The king finds out that the spies are there. Now, how he heard that, how he was so in tune with people that were on the outer fringes of the city, in the lower areas, how that word got all the way to the palace is unbelievable to me. But somehow or another, he heard about it. And he sent somebody to go get those spies to kill them. And they knock on her door and say, give us those two men. And in a moment, I mean in a split second, she had to make a decision. Am I going to turn them over and spare my own life? Or am I going to defend them and lie to these men in hopes that maybe they'll spare mine? Her life was in the balance either way. They would have killed her for committing treason, which is what she did. The king, if he'd have found out that those men were in that house, he would have killed her for treason, because she lied. On the other side, she knew that they were going to destroy the city anyway, and she probably would have died that way. She knew that she was in a dilemma. But I believe this hurting woman, this woman whose heart was hollow, this woman who had a desire in her heart to that her life would not have been that way, but it was. I believe that she saw those two spies and she thought, maybe, just maybe, maybe there's a new way that I don't know yet. Maybe there's a way that I haven't experienced yet that is different than all of the ways I've experienced up until this point in my life. And she hid those men, and when the people of Jericho, the officers were gone. She gave them specific instructions. Go down the rope, go to the mountains, stay for 3 days, and then go home. And I want you to save my whole family, not just me. Because I believe that she wasn't on good terms with her family. I believe that what she did for a living gave a disconnect. And she was that person in the family that people just didn't want to be around. She was that person in the family that her brothers and sisters just rolled their eyes when they thought about her. And here she was, the one woman in the darkest place, and God was willing to rescue her because the longing of her heart was to find a God that she had never met before. Now, here's what's interesting. After the covenant was made, I saved your life, now you save mine. And she let those men down that rope. This is where the hard part is. Those men disappeared into the night. with her instruction. And they were gone. Now, she hoped that they would come back and rescue her, because she'd already committed treason and had to live with these people. She hoped that they really would come back. But they didn't come back in a day or two. I want you to look at the amount of time that it would have been from the time she let them down that rope until the time they came back. I want you to look at this now. She told them to go to the mountains for 3 days and then go home. So it would have taken 3 days in the mountains and then 2 days back across the river and then a day with Joshua to talk to him. And then the word says that Joshua called a 3-day fast of consecration of all 2 million people. And he did that with his own nation before they ever went down to the Jordan and God split that river and let them walk across, which was the first miracle that ever happened with Joshua. It was 3 days, and then it was the trek across, and then it was a period of coming up to the edge of Jericho, and then there was an encounter with an angel that Joshua had who gave him the instructions of what to do, and then it was a 7-day walk around the city. Now, we're already 3 weeks in, and Rahab is still in her home, and she's been made a promise, and she has believed that promise is going to happen. But it's now days are ticking off, and it's still not happening. Days are ticking off, and we're still not any closer to where we thought we were going to be. There is this period of time that God usually allows us to go through between the promise and the provision that is the hard place to sit and wait. I hate those spots, don't you? They are hard spots to sit and wait. But the place between the promise and the provision has to be walked out because God just set it up that way. I wonder why. I think the reason he does that is because he wants us to know that he is not our remote control. He's not my remote control. I can't say to him, Lord, can you fix that today? And him just do it like that, because if it was that simple, you know what? I wouldn't think about him until I needed him. I wouldn't have any reason to have fellowship with him because he'd just be my remote control. It is not magic. There's nothing magic about Christianity. Christianity is about relationship, and God wants relationship with his people. And he wants to touch us in the places where we hurt. He wants to touch us in the places where we have things that are not set right. And when we give him our time, he will give us our provision. But he has to walk us through time to get us to our provision. And there is no other way to do it. And Rahab is sitting in her house, giving herself to the next man who knocks on her door. Because she can't tell everybody, I've met the Lord and I've changed. Because she hasn't. She hasn't met the Lord yet. She's still carnal. She hates her job. She hates what she's doing, but she can't quit. And the next guy comes in. And about 3 weeks later, she looks out the window, and this mountain of people are coming toward the city. And she's thinking, I hope they remember me. I hope that they don't forget, because now it's coming true. And then the first day, there's 2 million people who line up and start walking around a 12-acre wall. 2 million people can line up around the wall, and there's never a place on the wall where there's a gap. 2 million people could circle that thing twice. And here she's looking out her window and seeing people walk by. All day, if need be. Ever how long it takes to get 2 million people by your window. And the next day, it happens again. And she's still thinking, I hope they remember me. I hope they remember me. I am miserable in my state. I hope they remember me. Day 6 comes. Day 7 comes, and they go early. And now they've walked in it again. Now she's seeing the same people twice. And here they come again. Now she's seeing the same people 3 times and 4 times and now 7 times. And when that trumpet sounds and those 2 million people shout, God of heaven takes that 6-foot wall that's 41 feet high and goes and rattles it until it falls all apart. And that rope that's been hanging out of her window, those 2 spies, every time they've walked around that place, they've seen, yep, that's the place. That's the rope. That's the one right there. We got to save that one right there. And there's even speculation as to whether the wall even fell at all right where she was. And she went and got her family during all this walking and said, Dad, Mom, I know you're not happy with who I am. I get it. But you need to come to my house. And I know my brothers and sisters aren't speaking to me, but I need you to go get them and bring them too. And they're looking at her like, what? You're on the outside wall. You're on the wall that's closest to the destruction. Why would we come there? And she's like, just do it. There's something that I can't tell you, but you need to know. Please go get my brothers and sisters and bring them to my house. And here come the brothers, and here come the sisters, and they're going into the area of town that they really don't want to be in. And they walk in her door, and I can see the sisters-in-law now going, ew, honey, do we have to stay here? This is gross. And the brother just rolling his eyes like, she's always been that way. Can you feel her hurt? Can you feel her wounds? She's disgraced by the people she wants to love her, that she wants them to love her. And she's taken advantage of by the people who don't care about her. And she's sitting in her home looking out the window at an enemy that she hopes at least remembers her. This woman is at the tipping point of tension. And all of a sudden, the walls start shaking. And she's going, I don't have anything left to give. I'm completely spent. I've done everything I know to do. If this doesn't work, we'll just all die. And all of a sudden, everything falls except her window with a rope. God orchestrates that whole thing and isolates that one place because he can do that. And she lets all of those people that are in her family down that rope, one after the other. And her entire family is rescued because of her faith and hope that there has to be a better way than the way I currently live. And in that hope for that future, in that hope for that better place, in that hope for that better day, God sees that as righteousness. This filth of a woman, God looks at her in a different lens than you and I do. He sees her in a different way than we do. He looks beyond her activities, beyond her circumstances, beyond her surroundings, straight into her heart. And he says, that woman has hope and faith. And I'm crediting that faith as righteousness, and I'm about to respond. Ugh. Abraham's faith was credited to him as righteousness. Jesus endured the cross for the hope and the joy that was set before him. He already knew what it was going to look like on the other side. And if I can just take another lash, I'm getting to where I'm going. If I can just take it one more time, I'm getting out of here. I'm moving into a better place. And she's sitting there saying, this is the next customer, the next guy. But my hope is coming through that window. My hope is coming. It's surrounding this place now. If I can just hold on, my hope is coming. And God says, that's righteousness, and I'm going to show up now. We don't quit. We don't ever quit. It doesn't matter what it looks like. It doesn't matter if it turned out the way we thought. It doesn't matter if it's fixed. It doesn't matter if it's undone. We don't ever, ever, ever quit. And as long as we won't quit, God says, that's faith. And I see that as righteousness. And I'm going to solve that problem. And that's a promise. And you can go through the Word and look for that, and you'll find it everywhere. It's laced all through the Scriptures. There's a promise. There's a wait. There's a provision. Always happens. I know I'm just telling you one long story, but I bet you've never thought about it. All of Rahab's family is saved. She comes down that rope. Everything is destroyed. They burn the city. They take all of the gold and silver and put it in the treasury of the Lord. And the city is destroyed completely, except for Rahab's family. Now, Rahab's family, you have to understand, is going to have some transition struggle. Because they've been prominent people doing their prominent thing in their city life for their entire lives. And now all of a sudden, their occupation's gone. Their house is gone. Their city is gone. And they're standing there with a group of foreigners, about 2 million of them, that they don't know, they don't understand, they don't recognize, they have no contact with, and now they're foreigners in another land. There's a little bit of culture shock, don't you say? But the Word says that it all worked out. Here's what's neat. One of the spies' name was Salmon. I bet he loved his parents for that. Salmon fell in love with Rahab. And he asked her to marry him. And she did. And that one thing she'd always wanted in her life, which was a man to defend her, to save her, and come and rescue her, and then to love her and show her deep affection. That one thing she'd always wanted, God gave it to her. And she and Salmon had a son, and his name was Boaz. And Boaz married a foreigner, which was equally as interesting of a story. And they had a son named Obed. And Obed and his wife had a son named Jesse. And Jesse and his wife had a son named King David. Rahab was the great-grandmother of the king of Israel. Prostitute to the palace. That's what God will do if we are faithful in the waiting and the holding on of His promise. Did you hear what I just said? He will take us from the prostitute to the palace. And we are a part of the process. Now, Rahab never saw the palace, but if she had known that her great-grandson was going to be the king, she would have shouted for joy. And God took that promise and took it all the way to the palace. And her life was forever changed. We talk about someday all the time. Someday, I hope this happens. Someday, I want to do this. Someday, I might go do that. You know, someday, I might get an education. Someday, I want a mate. Someday, I want a better job. Someday, I want my community to be better. Someday, I hope this happens and that happens. But God chooses when He's ready, because He doesn't do it till He's ready. But when He's ready, there's a someday that becomes today. And on that day, everything changes. You may have been saying, someday I hope, someday we need, someday I should. But if you'll begin to seek the Word and seek the Lord about it, there'll be a day, if you start pursuing Him, I promise you, if you start pursuing Him, there'll be a someday that turns into today. And today will change everything, just like it did for her. Everything. And God's calling us to find that place in our heart where we can believe and hope that maybe He will. Maybe He'll do it. Maybe He will. At least I'm going to ask Him to. At least I'm going to put it in front of Him. And then if He wants to change it, He can. If He wants to decide when it happens, okay. But at least it's in front of Him. And that place is hope. And that place is credited to us as righteousness. And righteousness always gets His attention. Always. I'm not really sure how to end this, except that when I woke up this morning and I was struggling with this, because I was, the verse of the day popped up on my phone. Pops up about 6:45. And it said, Psalm 130, verse 5, and this is David, her great-great-grandson, talking. He says, I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits. Everything in me waits. And His Word, in His Word, I will put my hope. In His Word, I will put my hope. When He says to us, I will provide for your needs, I will give you what you need. When He says, I will take care of you. When He says, I will be with you when you struggle. I will be with you in your loneliness. When He says, I will be with you and meet your needs. When all of those things, that's where our hope is. We can't manipulate circumstances to get His will. Anytime we manipulate circumstances, we get a substitution. Ask Abraham. His will is always on time. His someday is, His today is always on the right someday. It's always right. I just want to tell you, and I've been through these places. And I'm still in a couple of them myself, where it's just having to wait Him out. Lord, when is your time? When is your sink? What is it you're doing? But He has never, ever left me hanging. He's never left me out on a ledge by myself. Not ever. We've been fighting this thing at the college since 2012, December of 2012. And last Friday, we got a phone call. I shouldn't even tell you all this yet because the president hadn't even announced it yet. We got a phone call from the bond council. And they said, we're ready to settle this. Let's get this fixed so y'all can keep moving. December of 12 to now. I've had days and months and years where I have been so weary. And I thought, God, I can't keep doing this. I have no more energy. My energy is spent. But you know what? When you tell Him stuff like that, He says, okay, I'll give you some more energy. It's all right. And He'll send somebody along, put their arm around you and go, hey, it's going to be all right. And He'll encourage me. And that encouragement will get me on down the road a little farther. His encouragement's always there when we need it. And when we tell Him, I don't have any more energy, it's okay. It's all right. I'll give you some more. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. Now, why did it take so long? I don't know. I wish it didn't. I wish it would have happened quick. But As long as it's happening, that's the main thing, right? As long as the Lord's with me, that's the right thing. I can be still when He's asking me to be still, and I can move and put my hand to something when He's asking me to do that. The point is that we have to be in tune with Him, and our heart's deep, dark longings, He already sees them. And when we can put faith and hope and trust in Him, He says, that's righteousness. I like righteousness. That's belief in me. I like that. Let's take that and do something special with it. And that's when He always shows up. He parts those rivers. He destroys those walls. He creates those temples. He takes care of those enemies. He solves all those problems when our heart is longing and focused on Him. Let's stand. I apologize for going long this morning. I hope I didn't burn any pot roast. I needed you to hear the gravity of this story. Because when we can capture it, we know that God will hear us too. And I hope that's encouraging. So I'm going to turn this back over to Johnny in just a minute, but I'm just going to say a prayer over us, and then you can come finish whatever what you need to do. If you'll join me, Father in heaven, would you stir up our hearts? Would you remind us of your promises? Would you speak to us and stir up hope, and stir up peace, stir up, future and thoughts, Lord, that we need to be thinking, and in our heart, that you would stir up faith, that you would really, we would know that you are with us and that you have not left us. And whatever it is that we're struggling with, whatever it is that's in our lives that we don't know how it's going to end up or be fixed, Lord, would you give us hope and faith and let us please you that it would be righteousness so that you will step in and solve that? God, we just ask you to solve it. And that one of these someday's soon becomes the day that you show up and do what we cannot do. And God, I ask you to give us peace in the process and that you give us hope and even excitement about the new things that you're doing in all of our lives and that you would change us and draw us to you and give us hope, God, and give us future in your promise and in your provision. Thank you for that, and we'll bless your holy name because only you can do that. And we love you for it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us today. Mountain Gap Church offers our community Sunday worship and Wednesday night teaching and discipleship classes. If you would like further information on times and location, you may find us online at mountaingap.org.